Okay, my name is Tess Newton-Kane. I'm a research associate with the Development Policy Centre, and today it's my great pleasure to be able to spend some time talking with Peter Farrell, who is the Director General of the Melanesian Spearhead Group Secretariat. Peter, thank you very much for being able to be available for a chat today.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
So, as many of our listeners will know, this year's a significant one for the MSG as it celebrates its 25th anniversary. So perhaps we could start with you maybe giving us a bit of a rundown as to what sort of things your secretariat has planned to mark that milestone in the MSG's history.
Certainly, and thank you for starting with that question, because we're still quite excited about what has started to happen for us in terms of the events. And we had started launching the events here in Vanuatu, as you know, last Saturday, which was the 26th of January this year, we had a symposium that was held here in Port Vila, attended by our ministers, former leaders who were former chairs of the MSG, and some of the senior states people who had been part of the founding process of the MSG back in 1988 when we signed the Agreed Principles of Cooperation here in Port Vila in March 14. So we had that very successful symposium which allowed our leaders and our ministers and our stakeholders, as well as some of the public here in Port Vila, to discuss some of the issues relevant to our organization, focusing on our history, what are some of the challenges, and now how best we as an organization can address some of them. So very successful indeed. And then we had the main launching of the celebrations on Monday 28th this month, again here in Port Vila, which the Prime Minister of Vanuatu hosted on behalf of the MSC Chair, the Prime Minister of Fiji. Now, that's the launching of the celebrations. We had a big event to launch that. And so what will happen now from here on in will be the finale will be held in Noumea in June, which will coincide with the Leaders Summit. And before that, each of our members have been allocated a month where they will nominate a week in that month to celebrate the 25th anniversary of our organization. So we've allocated a week in March, which the government of Vanuatu has identified to be the week where the 14th falls on, because that will be the main day of our celebrations, marking the actual day that the organization was established after the signing of the Agreed Principles. And then the other members will be able to pick a week in April and May, which is Fiji and Papua New Guinea. Now, Fiji has requested for their week to follow immediately after Vanuatu because of some of their national commitments. That's fine. So what the plan now is, Fiji will also hold their week in March, during a week that we are now engaging with them to plan around. And then the Solomons and Papua New Guinea will look at weeks in May and April. April and May. And then, of course, the Kanaki communities will be having theirs around the summit week in the middle of June this year. So that's the sort of things that will be happening. We are also thinking about these sorts of things that we are now talking about, having discussions with our partners about our issues, as well as some of the things that we can do together to improve our visibility and also improve our relevance to our members particularly, but also to the region and globally in terms of the challenges facing us. We are uploading a number of material in our website about some of the articles that we ourselves have done to add to these particular celebrations. And if you notice downstairs, we've put up a sort of display, a photographic display about our region and also some of the things we have been able to do currently. So overall, that's basically the arrangements for the celebrations.
It sounds like you have a very packed program, certainly over the next few months. Just to go back to something you mentioned about the symposium, you said that a number of overarching issues and challenges were identified. Could you give us a bit of a sense of the sorts of things that were discussed by the leaders during that conversation?
Well, certainly, you know, for me as the head of the Secretariat, I found it very useful that we did have that space. The first time ever we've been able to talk amongst ourselves about who we are, what we can do together successfully, and where we can go forward with addressing some of our needs. So some of the overarching theme, for example, were around our relevance as an organization. 25 years, what have we done? Is it a story that we can perhaps establish some of our thinking about going forward for the next 25 years? So that was one key overarching theme, which is quite a good one, because it will help us to remind ourselves about whether the celebrations, our celebrations for gains made in the last 25 years, and whether we could use those as stepping stones for going forward with some promise, with some hope. The other overarching theme was in relation to the purpose of the organization. We do have a lot of challenges still facing us, climate change, poverty eradication, women issues are quite important in Melanesia, resource management, land management. The main purpose, the main tenet of why our leaders saw it fit to have some sort of block was basically to help the freedom or the cause of some of our communities still not yet free from colonialism, if you like. Sorry, I'm using that word for lack of a better word. And there is a sense we haven't fully met that. So there is a sense that perhaps we should do more and do more to help communities who are still struggling to achieve that same freedom that all of our members have achieved. If I may just make a reference, for example, the Kanaki cause remains a very important cause for the rest of us. The other one was about our own reputation as a group in terms of governance, for example. Have we been able to agree amongst ourselves about some principles, for example, on good governance, and what kind of assurances can we extend to our citizens that our governance has their interest at heart, and there is reason to believe that we can still trust the leadership arrangements we have within our member governments. The issue of partnership was also raised, how we relate to each other, noting that one of the founding principles was that we will be friends to all, that we will make effort to create friendship for the good of Melanesia. And that means exploring opportunities to establish relations with all countries who wish to establish relations with us. And then there were issues about cultural relationships. We haven't done enough, some are saying, to make sure that our cultural linkages remain strong. And of course, the very obvious issue about economic development and social challenges, climate change and all that. So some key overarching themes were discussed, and unfortunately we didn't have enough time to cover all of them, as you would appreciate. But one of the learning things we got out from that discussion was there seems to be recognition that we needed to do more of that sort of Melanesian gathering or Melanesian discourse, if you like, to keep talking about our issues.
So we can look forward to more of those conversations going forward. You seem to be saying that it was considered a really valuable exercise and one that people would look to conduct
again. Yes. I mean, as I said, the fact we were able to bring a lot of our ministers and not only from the government. Well, normally we gather government ministers together. We've never had a chance to bring people from the opposition, for example, people from NGOs, to be discussing issues with our governments, with our decision makers, the legislature, for example. And this particular gathering gave us that opportunity, and we thought it's a good space for everyone to keep doing that. And so, yes, we are thinking about organizing some more events this year to keep progressing the discussion, involving all our stakeholders, who would, of course, be able to share ideas about how policies should be set in Melanesia. So I'm seriously thinking about organizing one, maybe with some of our partners that could be willing to partner with us in these sorts of things.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. Just to refer back to something you mentioned about taking that historical perspective, looking back over the last 25 years, what is your sense of what have been the high points and perhaps what have been the low points of the way that the MSG has developed since 1988?
Mm. Well, I think if I can start with the high points, one of the high points was the signing of the agreed principles, the affixing of the formal signatures of our two of our prime ministers, and one I believe at the time was a foreign minister or deputy prime minister, to have a formal organization called the Melanesian Spearhead Group. This was, as I said earlier, in March 14, 1988, here in Port Vila. So that was a key point for us in terms of our history. The other one was they agreed to have a trade agreement amongst the grouping, amongst the governments mainly. I believe it was in 1995 or thereabouts, which has been revised over the years. The one now was revised in 2007. That trade agreement was a major achievement for the group, because it's the only operational trade agreement in the region, and you can actually see products being exported and traded under the trade agreement, the MSC trade agreement. So we want to highlight that as one of our major achievements in terms of our history. The other one was, of course, when our leaders formally signed the agreement establishing the organization. It's a treaty ratified by our members and now deposited with the UN treaty section, which grants us the same legal status as any other international organization. And that was in 2008. And then the other high point would be the establishment of this secretariat. Only 4 years old, but I thought we've done quite well in the period. Normally, the formative years are quite shaky, and one would expect either you go forward or you go backwards or even fall off. But we've successfully gone past that stage, and we think we now have a good foundation to be going forward quite strongly. I think that those would be the main high points for us. The low points, unfortunately, I came in quite late. I mean, I'm only new. I'm only a year older now in this role. I haven't actually come across a low point in terms of either the secretariat or the relationship between our members. But I'm sure others who see us would be able to pick out one or two low points. And I suppose maybe, you know, the issues around now, chairing arrangements in 2010 and thereabouts. I mean, it was an issue, but then we were able to resort to our cultural ties to help us resolve that issue. So it didn't last long. It was resolved, and now we don't regard it as a low point at all. I'm sorry I couldn't pick up a major low point.
No, that's fine.
But I'm sure those who are familiar with our history would be able to help out with that particular side of our history.
Well, I guess maybe leading on from that, and perhaps maybe something that you would have already given some thought to, is looking ahead to the next 25 years. What do you think are going to be the big issues, the big challenges for the MSG politically, and I guess more particularly for your secretariat?
Well, thank you, Tess. I think that you might have picked up from some of the media statements that we are now establishing an eminent persons group to look at our vision, to look at our organization, to see what we can do better going forward to the next 25 years. So I don't want to preempt that particular process, but as the head of the secretariat, I obviously should have for myself and for our group some thinking about what our challenge is going forward. And I think one of our key ones would be the support we have to maintain for the Kanakis in terms of their political aspirations for full emancipation. So that's the immediate challenge. The next challenge is how our organization can be able to remain relevant to the aspirations of our members. As you know, Melanesia has a lot of challenges. And we don't want this organization just to be a secretariat for meetings. We want it to be more than that, to be a resource for our governments, for our members to use to help them with shaping their policy. So I would want that to be something that our members can help us to be able to achieve over time. The other challenge, of course, is how we can help our members to be able to be stronger internationally in terms of the discussions going around some of the global challenges, climate change, some of the trade issues. All of Melanesia now, apart from New Caledonia, are members of the WTO. We want our members to have some stronger voice in what happens at the WTO. And we want the secretary to be able to help them do that. At the moment, we are still standing on our national positions rather than on the positions that might be common to all the Melanesian group as an organization. And then, therefore, we can go with one voice to the international discussion. Our women are still very much underprivileged at the moment. You would have seen reports acknowledging the fact that not enough has been done to empower them, either in decision making or in economic participation. We want to make a difference there. We want to be able to have some capacity to help our women, to be able to be part of our governing arrangements, and to be part of our business community. So our challenge is to find a strategy and to build our capacity to be able to respond to that. Our youth too is a problem, not because by the fact that they are youth, but because we haven't done enough for them in terms of ensuring their education, in terms of ensuring there are economic activities which they can participate at, and therefore be active members of their economies. Luckily, our leaders are conscious of this particular matter, because we do have a huge youth population amongst our countries. And one of the things they have started to look at is to see if we can have a Melanesia Games to targeting our youth. There would be a certain age limit to it, because we have the Pacific Games, you know, both mini and the main one. And perhaps that could be a platform to prepare them to be able to participate in those activities. So that's one small step we are taking to engage our youth. And we hope we can have, again, a capacity to be able to deal with them. We have introduced a concept for a Melanesia Sports Institute to our sports ministers. They have fully endorsed it, and we are now taking it through our governing levels to see how we can bring that to fruition. And we have also started talking to some of our youth representatives, mainly in Port Vila, about some of the leadership assistance that we can provide to them through mainly the IUCN coalition, leadership coalition for green growth. So it's a small step, but we are trying to do something for our youth in recognition of their challenges. Now, finally, our role in the region has been questioned a number of times, and I believe that those questions were raised in relation to whether we are duplicating work that other regional organizations are doing, or how can we better strengthen our partnerships with them so that we can reinforce our interventions, particularly in Melanesia. So our challenge, I think, going forward is to be able to clarify that partnership and ensure that we can work together with them to be able to be stronger in supporting the governments and peoples in Melanesia. I also believe that this whole issue, this whole challenge of resourcing would remain one that we will need to address somehow in terms of our sustainability.
Yeah, those are some big ticket items. They're going to keep you and your successors busy for the next 25 years, I'm sure.
Well, hopefully, you know, I mean, that succession plan to form internal leadership at the secretarial level would be an issue that we need to keep an eye on, so that, you know, we keep making gains by ensuring that we have the right people leading the secretariat going forward.
You've raised a couple of items that I'd like to explore a little bit further. One is the position of the Kanaki people in what is currently called New Caledonia, and the other is the relationship between sub-regional groupings and regional organisations. So if we take them in that order, for the benefit of those that are possibly not fully across, the importance of the next couple of years in relation to New Caledonia.
Mm.
As we know, the Noumea Accord reaches a fairly critical junction next year in 2014,
mm.
at which point it's anticipated that there will be some form of referendum to mm. decide mm. whether there then should be a vote about independence mm. for the Kanaky people of New Caledonia. So, and also the Leaders' Summit for MSG meets mm. in Noumea this year, and they then take on the presidency,
mm.
the leadership of the group. So, can you tell us a bit more about how important, you've mentioned that this idea of decolonization is one that's very important, particularly mm. in relation to the Kanaky people. What is the role of your secretariat in preparing the leadership and ministers to engage at the political and diplomatic level in relation to issues around decolonization?
Mm. Mm. Well, I think one needs to be careful about how we address this because of the need to respect the Noumea court process, which is, of course, an accepted process for all the parties to it, the state and the two sides in New Caledonia, both the Kanaky and the pro-state dimension. I think, noting that respect, what I would say is we have always discussed the Kanaky issues in all our meetings, and we've discussed it in relation to the feedback we're getting from the Kanaky leaders about what's happening on the ground and about what's been planned in terms of maintaining that support among their communities to be able to achieve an outcome that is satisfactory to them when the referendum process is starting in 2014. It's not about starting to create new positions for us as to what might happen, but what we've been doing so far, at least in the time that I've been joined the secretariat, was to ensure that our leaders understand what's happening and are able to appreciate some of the challenges that the Kanaky communities, for example, are facing now, and whether we as a group can be able to help them with preparing their managerial skills so that they can be ready, with exposing them to the different governing arrangements in our countries, and with helping them to be able to, for example, develop their own economic capacity so that they can be self-reliant going forward after achieving independence, for example. So that's the kind of discussion we've been having. And I must say our members have been very supportive of doing that, to help the Kanakis prepare for the possibility of independence. And what we've done is we've established a unit here to specifically coordinate that for us. It's called the FLNKS unit. I want to say a bit more on this because we wanted to call it a different name, a broader name, for example, decolonization unit. But our leaders, recognizing that our key interest is to support the Kanaky, wanted us to call it specifically the FLNKS unit. So that's functional. Now we've just launched the opening on Tuesday, here. It's been manned by a Kanaky staff, and we want to expand its capacity. The government of Papua New Guinea has kindly extended $300,000 to resource it, and we are also extending part of our regular budget to support its activities. Now, one of the initiatives that our member countries have encouraged us to do is to identify young Kanakis for secondment or placement with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in member countries, or where, which government institution they would feel they would gain from by being there. So that process is also continuing. And we are helping the Kanaki leadership to visit East Timor, for example, to learn from how they have been able to invest in their nation building after their struggles, to learn from their governing arrangements and that sort of thing. So we are already talking about that. And the government of Timor-Leste has kindly agreed to host them as a learning mission for the Kanak leadership. And I think in my time, we've mounted two missions to New Caledonia, a technical officials mission and a ministerial mission last year. Those missions help us to find from the other partners, the other stakeholders, the state and the other party to the Numi Accord, about the preparations that are happening now in terms of the implementation of the Numi Accord and the reports we shared with the United Nations, for example, for their own information. So that's helping us to be able to inform our leaders about how we as a group can help the Kanaki prepare for the realization of their goal for independence. Now, I think next year, as you know, will be a critical year for them. So we will be increasing the frequency of our visits to Numea, so that we are able to keep a close eye on what's happening on the ground and therefore advise our leaders about what the developments are in preparation for a possible referendum, especially in 2014.
I was very interested that you said that there'd been initially some discussion about describing that little team as the decolonization unit. And I'd be interested to know, and I realize that this is from your perspective as the leader of the Secretariat, how that might go in terms of other issues that may arise within our part of the Pacific. And I guess I'm thinking particularly in terms of the ongoing discussions about the status of West Papua, and also, which is now looming on the horizon, the possibility of Bougainville undertaking its own process of determining whether it wishes to become independent from the rest of Papua New Guinea. Now, I'm not expecting you to, you know, tell me what's going to happen, but I think it would be interesting to just have a sense of how those conversations maybe start. Obviously, the position in relation to the Kanaki people seems very well developed and established. The impression that I get, and I'd be interested to know whether I'm correct, is that these other conversations are maybe a little bit more nebulous, a little less fixed down.
I think you're correct to take that view, because that's exactly what's happening. Although there is a strong sense out there that we could be doing more, but no, we didn't have in mind the potential for us to be relating to other territories or other parts of certain countries. For example, we thought we might use it to attract resourcing for the union and to follow the UN processes, you know, where they call themselves or part of them anyway, a decolonization unit or something. That was the rationale for trying to look at a different name. And we also thought we didn't want to perhaps unnecessarily put the FLNKS in a position where people would start asking questions about why have you established a unit for one of your members and not for the rest of the members, for example. But in the end, when it was discussed, there was a general goodwill and understanding that there is a particular reason why we needed to call it specifically the FLNKS unit and not a decolonization unit, which did not allow us to be focused, and you know, it avoided us having that sort of confusion in the way we relate to each other. activity. So, in short, that was the Rasna. We didn't have in mind the other interest groups that are seeking also the same goal.
Is it your sense that those issues may become more significant for the MSG grouping going forward?
Yes, but in relation to one of them, because the Kanaki themselves have been associated with their cause, and they are now starting to say, well, look, we can't really forget them. We are aware of their cause, and we want to see if we can do a bit more for them. And incidentally, the public is also making some noises about how our grouping can call ourselves Melanesia when actually the whole of Melanesia is not free, for example, without making any specific references. And the international community, of course, has begun to ask questions. The UN Secretary General in Auckland made a very specific statement that he believed there was a case for one of the remaining territories or part of a country to be decolonized, for example. So if that is the sense of the international community, then inevitably an organization like ourselves will find ourselves being involved more and more,
yes,
in either the discussions or in certain activities that will help take those causes forward. But I must say I'm very sensitive to the respective positions of our members, and I think they have a reason to taking certain positions on these matters.
Yes, I think, as you say, it's a sensitive issue, and it's one that needs to be looked after in a particular way. And I'm sure we will be seeing more of that in a range of forums as we go forward. To just go back to the other point that you discussed briefly, which is the relationship with other regional organisations. I think there are some commentators, and I'm happy to put my hand up that I'm one of them, that said that it sometimes appears, or it often appears, that groupings such as the MSG are where our leaders of our region see they get things done, and that those sub-regional groupings, if you want to call them that, are possibly more relevant in terms of decision making than the bigger regional groupings, whether it's the Pacific Islands Forum or the SPC or any of those. So I don't wish you to comment to say whether or not you agree in terms of relevance, but I think it would be really informative to know, from your perspective, how you see those relationships between the bigger regional organisations and the sub-regional organisations. How do you see them now, and how do you see them evolving in the next little while?
Yeah, I guess I'm lucky. I have worked in the two different levels of our regional architecture, if you like, at the Forum and now here at the MSG. And I think I can share some views on this, with the aim to help us, you know, appreciate better how we do our work and can do our work more effectively. I can understand why there are some commentaries about whether you are doing it better at the sub-regional level, or there have been issues raised about why, for example, the APEX regional body is not seen to be performing more effectively as it can. But I don't think I can venture to be able to do that. What I can do is make some comparisons about what the experiences I saw at the main regional level, and then what I'm starting to see now. I think we have the benefit of a small grouping. The dynamics are not as broad as you would see at the Forum, for example, if I may just refer to the Forum. And so it's easy to manage dynamics here at the sub-regional level, and it helps us, the Secretary, to be able to do our work much more effectively and relate well to our members. The other point, too, is the involvement, and I'm sorry to say this, but it's only it's because it's a fact that I'm able to say it quite easily, is the involvement of our bigger countries in regional organizations. Obviously, they do have the capacity to shape and maybe exert a bit more influence on the work program and, for example, and what kind of direction should an organization be taking in terms of how you do your business. We don't have that that challenge.
So just for the benefit of those that may not be as familiar with the makeup as you and I are, by the bigger countries, you mean Australia and New Zealand?
Yes. But that is not to discount the value of their membership.
No,
it's only because I'm trying to make a comparison. We do not have that challenge of having to determine whether we are meeting the requirements of the bigger members, for example, because there is a difference in what they do for the regional organizations in terms of budgetary support and in terms of capacity support. Luckily for us, all our members pay an equal contribution. There is no additional conditions placed on us if they decide to add a bit more resources to their normal contributions. So it allows us to have some flexibility in deciding how we can best work for our members. The other challenge, as I see in terms of making that comparison, is the ability for us to connect on a regular basis with our members. As you know, Vanuatu is central to our membership, and it's quite easy for us to visit them on a regular basis. Unfortunately, because of the bigger membership of our regional organizations, they do not have that benefit. So, in fact, some of them are not visited at all. Mm-hmm. And you start creating perceptions about, oh, hang on, I thought this organization was for us too. Why aren't we that sort of thing? So it's because of those challenges that governments start asking questions about relevance and all that. And because when you look at regional strategies, you take a common fit for all members. You do not take a best fit where it reflects certain peculiarities for each of your members. So because of that, questions about relevance too are being asked, particularly by the smaller island states, although there is an appreciation for their issues by setting up certain programs for them. But when you talk about the broader strategies, they are not treated any separately from the bigger members. We don't have that challenge because we think all our members are almost the same size, even though their economies and populations are different. Now, the other challenge is in terms of the relationship with us, with our ambassadors in certain key locations around the globe, in the UN particularly, and in Brussels. There is a weakness in our regional organizations relate to Pacific ambassadors in this capital. We are fortunate we don't have that challenge. We relate very well to them. And so they do a bit of advocacy for us, which help us to have some visibility internationally. So I think you can very clearly see why we are seen to be a bit more effective in relating to our members, in delivering services to them, than the crop agencies, for example. Now, as to whether that is going to be the future of the region, no. Despite the fact that the Polynesians are also thinking about setting up their own group, well, it's already taking form. I would still believe that the regional architecture will remain, as is. What will happen, though, in my view, is increasingly there would be stronger partnerships between our groupings and the other sub-regional groupings to a particular regional body. And maybe, for example, we could be delivering services on their behalf, for example. As I said earlier, I established under our own treaty, independent of any regional organization. So because of that, we have regarded ourselves as a regional organization within Melanesia, because we don't report to any regional grouping. But I think the question remains as to whether by being ourselves, we are creating a barrier or a different setting for our own grouping than the rest of the Pacific. I didn't think that was the intention at all. But as I said, it's because we seem to be relating well to our members that we appear to be doing some good things for them. And unfortunately, the bigger regional organizations do not have that benefit. I think that's my take on that particular matter.
Yes. That's great. You mentioned that you have experience of having worked with the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, and I understand you also were part of the team at the Forum's Fishery Agency as well. So you obviously have a wealth of experience of working in these peak organisations at the regional level and the sub-regional level. So just as a sort of a final wrap-up, if you like, it would be really fascinating to know what it is you've learnt personally and professionally from that, from your career history so far. And also, I guess, if you could create your ideal regional organization based on what you know, what might that look like?
Well, I tell you, as an individual, I've learned a lot from those opportunities. The FFA, as you know, is a sectoral agency. It deals mainly with fisheries management. So it gave me an opportunity to be involved with work related to a very important resource in the region. And because of that, I have now been able to gain for myself some experience and knowledge about what's happening in the fisheries sector, for example, mainly in the tuna sector. In relation to the politics of it, very interesting politics there, and to the economics of it, again, very interesting economics there. At the forum, I must say, I went there as a novice. I didn't know what to expect, but luckily for him, for me, there was a great Secretary General on board at the time, the late Mr. Irwin, who was bent on his commitment to train Pacific Island potential leaders as part of being recruited at the Secretariat. So he treated my recruitment like that. He saw that there was potential and there was a need for us to expose young Pacific Islanders to leadership roles in the Secretariat. Having spent 6 years there, I came out a very different person in terms of my leadership qualities and abilities, and I was committed to make a contribution to my own country, but this calling came I was able to take up this position in 2011. And so that exposure at the regional level made me see things differently here. And I'm now avoiding some of the issues, some of the, challenges that I had learned while working at the forum. For example, I'm very careful about my respect for the membership, my respect for partners, because I thought they are very important in shaping our organization. And I believe some of that has helped us to be able to gain some success in how people view the MSC Secretary, which I perhaps wouldn't think we have achieved. We would have achieved if I didn't have that, that background with me as being head of the Secretary. The ideal organization, I think, you know, we have the SPC, the older regional organization, and the forum, which is the apex regional organization in terms of the relationship with the leaders. We had an opportunity to correct the difference between what is being done by the different agencies when the regional architecture was reviewed in 2008. Unfortunately, the outcome was a bit different from the intended objective of the review, which was to connect all the regional organizations to one organization. And they would have one agreement, one charter for their operations. And they will all be serving to one or to specified objectives, but common to all organizations. That's not how it's panning out now. The regional organizations are quite different. They have their own charters. And so that disconnect is there. The coordination is being questioned. As well as the issue of duplication is currently also being raised. So the ideal regional organization, in my view, would be one that stems out from all these different organizations, where you have a single regional organization with different agencies to reflect the expertise that is needed to serve, for example, the fisheries sector, environmental issues. SPC can look after the technical issues that it has, comparative advantages on health, social, that sort of thing. I don't think the current architecture will serve us well, because we are already seeing issues with coordination. Climate change, we have failed terribly to make an impact internationally, because we have almost three regional organizations trying to help the region, but in different directions. And spread is becoming more and more less recognized because of its perhaps you know, it doesn't have the political clout as the forum or the SPC has. So it's not a criticism of what it's not doing. It's just because the organization with some political clout tends to take things a bit more to certain levels than the organizations that don't have that clout. So it's not helping us at all, because we are not saying the same things. We are not reinforcing our position for a key issue that is of significant importance to the region. If I may just say a final word about this, I think our region would be better served if all of us sat down, the members and all the regional organizations, at some sort of forum organized by someone to get us together and clarify some of these issues. Because after all, we are serving the same people. And I think we would get rid of some of the confusions going around now, which is not helping any of us at all. If we can do that, I think we might find an opportunity for us to strengthen what we do, and who knows, we might find a way to work towards that ideal organization, which at the moment continues to delude us, because we have perhaps different ideologies about how we can do our business for our members and for the region as a whole. That, I think, would be a great opportunity if someone can have the courage to bring us all together. I think we'll find a way to achieve that.
Okay, well, that's certainly something to look forward to. Mm. Peter Farrell, thank you so much for making yourself available to chat today, and thank you for your insights on a wide range of issues, and best of luck for the rest of your very busy year marking the 25th anniversary of the MSG.
Thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
You're very welcome.